Hi, I'm Renelle Golden, and you're listening to the Movie Making Podcast. This episode is brought to you by Atlas VPN.
Hello, everybody. Today we are here with John Hancock. He is a director extraordinaire, and he's probably done a few of your favorite movies. How are you doing today, John? Welcome.
I'm good. I'm enjoying the holidays and looking forward to New Year's Eve.
Yes, New Year's Eve. I can't believe another year went by so quickly. Are you somewhere where it's cold?
I am. I live northwest Indiana, about an hour and a half from Chicago.
So okay, so you've got a little chill up there.
It usually is very cold here, and we get lake effect snow, but we haven't had hardly any of this for the last 2 years, so I'm worried that we're no longer in the snow belt.
Yeah. Oh, man. I'm from Ohio, and I love that snow, and I lived in Chicago, too, where you got, you know, it blew off of the, I guess it's lake effect snow, and it was wonderful. It was for Christmas? Oh my gosh, it was wonderful. So, but let's get started. I was kind of reading about your bio, and you started in theater. You're a theater guy.
So I started directing plays when I was in college. And when I graduated, I went to New York right away, and I did a hit off Broadway when I was 22, a Brecht play, A Man's a
Wow.
Man.
Wow. Did you figure it out in college, or were you like in high school when you kind of got like the theater bug? That
No, I was going to be a violinist, but
oh, wow.
I went to Tanglewood the summer before I went to college, and I discovered that I thought I was real good. And then I discovered that there was a 14-year-old boy that was 10 times better. So that discouraged me about it.
Oh, wow. The violin is not an easy instrument.
Oh, my God.
I did
so
try it.
Yeah.
Wow.
I wasn't able to practice 5 hours a day, so I thought I'd better cast about for something else.
Yeah. And violins are fretless, aren't they? So you really...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So there are intonation questions, which was not always the best thing.
Well, we are all glad you ended up where you did, because I know you've made some wonderful, just great films. And, you know, in the 1980s, the one that comes, I think it's the 1980s, was Prancer?
Yeah, 89, I think. Yeah.
It's
the season for Prancer. They screened it at the local art house about a week ago, and I saw it again. I hadn't seen it for a while, and it was...
Oh,
I was pleasantly surprised.
Were you? That's very cool. So, well, let's kind of start at the beginning. So what, your very first film, what was that?
I got a grant from the American Film Institute. I had done a lot of theater. I ran several big regional theaters. I'd won an Obie for a production of Midsummer Night's Dream that I'm still very proud of.
Wow.
But I got a grant from the American Film Institute and made a short called Sticking My Fingers, Fleet My Feet, about businessmen that play touch football in Central Park.
Oh, that's very cool.
It was based on a New Yorker short story, and was nominated for Academy Award. People liked it. It was very funny.
That's amazing.
So that got me my first two features. I did a scary picture called Let's Scare Jessica to Death, and then I did Bang the Boom Slowly.
Oh, wow. Wow. So have you noticed, I mean... You have been in this industry through it all, through even the transition into the digital age. Have you noticed, for people to get out there now and break in, what do you think some of the biggest differences are?
Well, because it's so much cheaper to make a movie than it was when I broke in. But it's very hard to get them distributed properly. So there's a great many films are being made that nobody sees, really, or a few people see on, you know, that just chance upon it on some streamer.
Yeah.
So
that is true.
It's still hard to break in, but you can make something without a lot of money.
That's true. And a lot of us, we do start out as indie filmmakers. We do end up as especially writers, we end up having to make our own in order to get it seen so our work can be seen.
Yeah.
But it's not necessarily a good thing on the distribution side and actually establishing a career level in your career, establishing the ability to be like self-sufficient, because distribution's definitely, it's a challenge and you can put it anywhere, but that doesn't mean it's going to be seen and going to make its money back. It's, I always, when I talk to people who have had that long career, it's always interesting that that always comes up. So when you made your first two films and you decided at that point, this is my career, did you move out to Hollywood? Did you take that typical path everyone has to take?
I did, after Bangor and Slowly, which was got such wonderful reviews, and I was very hot in the business, so I moved out to Malibu, and yeah, I made that move. There are people that think I shouldn't have, but I did.
You did. It worked for you. How did you pick your projects? Did people come to you, or were you able at a certain point to like, okay, I want to do this, or I want to do that?
Well, one came about one way or another way. I mean, right after Bangor and Slowly, I decided to do a project that I always wanted to do, a book about country music called Ruby Red. And It was a big development deal at Paramount that never happened.
Oh. But
then I think I was offered Baby Blue Marine. I've many times found it difficult to get on the things that I wanted to do.
Gotcha.
So, I mean, there's such a huge element of luck and timing in the business that's always
got to fall into place.
Yeah, yeah. You think, well, this is the kind of pictures that you want to do, and they're not necessarily the pictures that you want to do.
Yeah, sometimes you have to pay the rent.
Yeah, I got very quickly type because of Bang That I'm Slowly as Warm and Human.
Oh, that's a good thing to be.
Well, I'm not warm and human, so I wanted to show that I could do action, and I should never have agreed to do Jaws 2, which ended badly for me. I was fired in that after shooting about 3 weeks.
And, oh, wow.
That was a major setback. But
was that one of your like hardest, most difficult moments throughout your career?
Yeah, probably the most. Yeah.
What's one of the greatest?
Well, probably the reception of Bang That I'm Slowly. But I did a picture Weeds with Nick Nolte about a prison drama group.
Oh, I love him. Oh.
My wife and I, you know, took a second mortgage on our house and researched and got to know all the members of the ex-cons that were part of the group, and I did it for Dino, and my best friend Bill Bottolato was the producer, and that was a really peak experience. I loved
it. I'll have to watch that. I probably have seen it because I loved Nick Nolte growing up. I mean, he's an amazing talent on screen, so that must be a powerful film.
He was a lot of fun to work with, too, at that point. And he was trying to be relatively drug-free and sober. And so we
good.
Had a great time doing it. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah, that definitely a lot of stories there. So the last thing I remember is him with Barbra Streisand. I think they did a movie and lots of stories.
Surprise. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm listening to an audiobook of her autobiography. She reads it and it's 45 hours and it's fabulous.
Oh my God. She is one of my, just growing up, I wanted to be her. Every day I was singing all of her songs and I watched The Way We Were, the movie with The Way, was it called The Way We Were? I think it was. No.
Yeah.
Yeah, all of her movies and there was one with the song People Who Need People, and like she was amazing. And
funny girl, yeah.
Yes, just such good talent.
A fabulous actress. It's very interesting to listen to her voice reading because she sounds controlled and sane and herself, but she interpolates in the reading little pieces of the different songs that her hits are moments from movies and things.
Oh, how interesting.
They're such theatrical abandon and emotion in her performances that is not in the voice in the reading. So it's like two people.
Oh.
It's like this same...
Or measured.
Yeah, measured person who understands herself in her life. And then all of a sudden there's this chaotic creature that's...
In the film.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's two people, kind of.
That's interesting.
It's like kind of like divine possession when she's performing.
She becomes what she is. I love that. Yeah. So as a director, what is your process in like preparing for a film? Or do you have one? Everyone might be different, right?
Well, a lot of things I've done that I've written or co-written. So that's, of course, one form of preparation. And you try to visualize things as much as possible, but then not get stuck entirely with the preconceptions of the way you've seen a scene, because you want to be able to take advantage of a specific location or what the actor wants to do is against how you envisioned it. And
it's
somehow mediating between preconceptions and being in the moment as a director.
Do you find that you sit down, like, I love to share with people that are in this industry how we all do things. And do you find that you sit down with like your creative team and sort of hash out, because like sometimes your camera, your DP guy, he may have his own vision as well. And do you all sort of discover that while you're on set, or do you do it ahead of time?
Well, I kind of try to control it myself. I mean,
good.
I try to listen to the DP to some degree, but I don't like a set where the DP is running the set.
Right.
So I tend to say, let's put the camera here and put this lens on. And
that's good. Yeah.
Now, many times a DP will say, well, I see you want to shoot in this direction, but if we could shoot in the opposite direction, we could have backlight. And I always give in on that because I want backlight.
Right.
So that kind of thing. But in terms of, I probably am insufficiently collaborative with DPs.
You know, somebody has to run the show. That's kind of how it goes. Yeah. And that is your job as director. So it's definitely interesting.
And I tend not to hire DPs that are legendarily difficult and assertive. I mean, I've always wanted to work with Gordy Willis, but I never have because I'm afraid he would run all over me.
He's kind of so amazing that you may have to deal with that. Yeah, that makes sense. I know, as indie filmmakers, when we all talk, one of the biggest challenges is because everyone can have a camera now and everyone can shoot. And sometimes you get these DPs that they have sunk all of their money into their camera system. Like they get the Red or they get an Arri, and then they're afraid to use it because they don't want to risk it. And this is at this like...
Do they risk damaging it? Or?
Yeah, like risk damaging it. They're afraid to move to get those certain shots. And I find that very interesting because it's a common complaint that, you know, we deal with, and we're like, well, what's the deal with this? Because if you know, for instance, outside shots, if you need like a moving shot, they aren't even willing to like walk or do over the shoulder. It's just interesting. And you're going, okay, maybe you need a more seasoned, or maybe you need a less seasoned. I can never find the balance. And every time we learn a lesson, a new lesson.
Or maybe you just need another, there are so many. I mean, the business is rich with DPs.
There
are a lot of really good ones.
Yeah.
And I have a number of times made a change.
Oh.
And that they're easily replaced. You can fire somebody on a Friday and have somebody else on set on Monday.
Yes, yeah. I need to get the courage to do that. I keep relearning that lesson. And I'm like, yes, I love that.
Because if they don't want to walk with the camera, I mean, find someone.
Yeah. Why are we there, right? Like, we need those shots. I still have a film that's been in post for about a year because I don't want to put my name on it if I don't have those long exterior shots, because there's a narration over this spooky outside. It's about human trafficking and a girl's telling her story. I need those specific shots. I could not get them. So, Yes, I'm learning. That's why I love talking to people like you and sharing the knowledge. Like, what can we share with people to empower them in their own journeys in filmmaking? Because it's not for the faint of heart.
Use your internet without limitations. Atlas VPN offers military-grade encryption and data leak protection, keeping you and your family safe online, no matter where you are. Available on iOS, Android, Windows, and other devices. For less than $2 a month, Atlas VPN stands above the rest. Get an extra 6 months of Atlas VPN for free when you select a 2-year plan. Use the Movie Making Podcast's affiliate link to sign up. Go to get.atlasvpn.com/moviemakingpod. That's getatlasvpn.com/moviemakingpod.
So what do you think your toughest challenge is as a director each time you step into a new project?
Financing.
Oh, God. Oh, yes. Yes, that is it. Definitely. Do you think it's changed a lot in how we should approach that as filmmakers from, 30 years ago, 40? Do you see a difference?
Well, the first two pictures that I made, Jessica and Bang That Up Slowly, both were very successful, and neither one had stars in it.
Uh-huh.
So I thought towards the end of my career that I can just go back and repeat that.
Oh, nice.
Well, it's not nice. I mean, the aspiration is nice, but
yes.
But you can't get it distributed properly if they don't
have a star.
Yeah. So I want to work. I mean, I love to work.
Yeah.
But it's very hard to attach actors with names without the ability to make a firm offer because the agents protect them and you can't get through to them.
You can't get them
to read it without having the money in escrow, and I don't have the money to put in escrow. So it's like an egg situation, and I'm finding that frustrating.
Yeah.
I have a new project, though, that I have great hopes for. It's about a New York detective who falls in love with a female serial killer. And
I love that. That's cool.
Yeah, and it's an actual love story. It's has a lot of feeling, and it's scary, and it's a romantic thriller. And I've got very powerful people in the industry that I think are going to be able to put it together and kind of jump past those problems of not being able to get it to actors because they're powerful enough to get it to actors.
Yeah, when we call talent, and I've noticed this because I have a Star is Born type project I wanted to have a gentleman from the Marvel series. He's an amazing musician. He released an album in 2020 and then he got hurt. So what I noticed is when we talk to agents about attaching, They come back usually with make us an offer. So when you're ready to make that offer, they're happy to take that script and read it.
Yeah, but, sure. They should come back when you're financed. It sounds wonderful, sounds exciting.
Catch 22. We don't have the money, but we need you attached to get the money. But, financing
is hard. From the agent's point of view, what their nightmare is you take their client and you shop them through the industry and drive their price down.
Oh, right. So they have to be really careful.
Yeah. So they've worked very hard to get Mark Ruffalo's price up. And if you hawk him to 20th and everywhere, they figure it compromises that long-term effort of career building and price building.
It is true. I will say this, though. Everyone we've ever talked to when we're calling agents has always been very nice and respectful because people are like scared and I'm like, just call and talk to them. They're human and they'll tell you, no, I can't, look at this yet. Come back when you have funding or make me an offer and go beyond that fear. I don't know why we have that when we're in this indie level for our projects, but we do. And
I mean, what's one of the central things that I've learned, and I've been doing this, 67
years?
Make the call, write the letter.
Yes.
Go backstage.
Yeah.
I believe no stone unturned.
That's right. I heard really good advice from a very young person that I talked to. And I started my career late, like in my mid-40s after going blind. I switched my career. It was weird. But he said that he was young, like 25 or something. I'm like, really? But he said every no is a good thing because it gets you closer to a yes, but it's also puts you on their radar. You now have made that connection or that contact. And he's like, don't look at it like a bad thing. And I was like, that is wonderful advice. So just do it kind of advice. And, you know, why not? So
do you think it's true? I mean, you get a no, then you come back with something else and get another no. And then you come back the third time and they don't read it.
What you learn is don't go back to that person unless you have the parameters that they're seeking, because you will get another no. So,
right.
Yeah, so you do have to kind of go a little more prepared or empowered the next time. But you have made the connection. You can add them to your list of potential people when you have the full funding or, you know, some things like that to make it a positive experience. But yeah, it is true in you know, looking at things through the rose-colored glasses kind of thing. It doesn't have to be as scary as it sounds. And I think a lot of people get scared and they start in this career, they spend their $70,000 to $200,000 to go to film school, and then they get a couple of no's and they end up, you know, working somewhere else. And
high school.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And I know a lot that have done that. I've known people that have opened studios and closed them, and it's just an interesting dynamic. And I just keep writing. I'm like, I'll just keep writing. So.
Yeah, I think courage is really
so
important.
One.
And to be relatively relentless.
Yes, yeah, that's true. So
some of the most talented people as actors or as directors or whatever just can't take the number of rejections, and they decide to have a nice life and not suffer.
Yeah, it's definitely we do suffer sometimes. So, yeah. And after last year, there's a lot of suffering going on while we all regroup. And yeah, it was a tough year. But what advice would you share with somebody who wanted to enter this industry now?
Well, you know, I've been teaching directing in Chicago at Columbia College and also at Second City, and I'm very happy to not be doing that anymore.
Oh.
But the advice that I give them is that you can't do it from Chicago. You have to go to Los Angeles or New York. So, and very few of them listen.
Yeah.
They just, you have to have courage.
Take that leap of faith or something.
What's the worst that can happen? You'll end up addicted to some drug and living with some producer. And I mean, who doesn't care for you? I mean, you're not going to die.
Yeah, so why not take...
You might. I mean, but you can die...
You can die breathing these days. Yeah, so it is kind of just have the courage to go out there and do it. But what about Georgia? That's an option now, too, maybe.
I don't know. Is it? Are decisions made in Georgia about... Is there someone in Georgia who can say yes?
There's a few people. Not as many, though, as in...
In Georgia?
Oh, me? Well, I live at home with my kids, but I'm in Florida, but I'm a writer. So it's not as that hard, but it is.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm ready to move, but I don't know what to do about them. Could I put them up, give them away?
too late, huh?
Yeah, it's too late. Oh, man. I would go, though. And we were out there for a long time. And then we came here in the early 2000s. So it's good advice. I would do it in a heartbeat if it were an option for me, just because actually when I was out there, I felt like I was with my people, like I was somewhere I belonged.
Right.
I can't even explain it. And we had TV writers next door and actors and just creative people all around. And,
yeah.
You know. It's a different thing, but I've thought about Georgia for sure because there's so many big studios up there now, and a lot of the big movies like Marvel and things are made there. But for a writer, I don't know, and I don't have I've only directed like 28 projects, and most of them indie. So
that's a lot.
Though? I don't know, because I feel like I have a lot to learn. I need to keep learning. And so I don't know that I could go up there and be a director, but maybe I could go up there and be a writer.
Yeah.
One day, I'm dreaming. You only live once that we know of while we're here.
Yeah, I think it kind of pays to pay attention to the one time.
That's kind of where I think about it. So, but, you know, every day, one day at a time, it's all good. And, you know, every little small success counts and we'll go from there. And yeah, so I would love to, as we close out, at first ask you, is there anything else you'd like to share?
Well, there's a book about me called Hancock on Hancock by Michael Doyle.
And if people
and I'm very indiscreet in it, so it's kind of interesting.
Is it an autobiography?
Well, it's, I guess it is, yeah.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to write that down so I can check it out.
It's written by a guy named Michael Doyle who lives in Wales, and it's a lot of me talking about different things that have happened to me. And
oh, that's neat.
It's long and very detailed. And
it needs to be an audiobook too, right?
Very gossipy. I would find it very difficult to do an audiobook. I think it's kind of nightmare. Just
long and
to avoid fluffs would be very, very difficult for me.
Yeah, I could understand that. But I do love them, but somewhat because I'm partially blind. I love audiobooks. They're fun. So, and I need to check out Barbara Streisand's. I didn't even know she had one. So that's very cool. If people want to look you up, is there a place they could go to read about you besides the book? Do you have a website or anything?
Filmmakers.com.
Filmmakers.
FILMACRES.
I love that name.
Filmmakers.com.
Filmmakers. When did you come up with that name? That is a cool name. Like, it implies tons of movies. Sky's the limit.
Acres. Well, casting, Susan Ouellette did a lot of casting for me, and I suggested Filmmakers, and she said, oh no, Filmmakers.
Oh, it was just like that. Oh, that's cute. I like that. Aw. All right. Well, I've had so much fun talking to you today. You are a delight. If you're up for it, I'm going to do the 5 for 5 questions.
Okay,
here we go. All right. They're really hard. There will be a test at the end, which I won't pass, but, you know. All right. What is your favorite food?
Lobster.
Do you ever go lobster fishing or anything like that? Have you ever done that?
Not since I was a teenager in the Florida Keys. Yeah.
That's where you'd go. That's cool though. Okay. Number two, I can't see, right? What is something that would inspire you or motivate you in life?
Well, I get a lot of inspiration from music. I find it very, when I'm preparing to do a movie or writing, I find it very useful to visualize the scene to different pieces of music.
Oh, that makes total sense.
It breaks down preconceptions and gives you ideas about the many ways something could be. And I found that very useful.
That is beautiful. What is one thing that you have dreamed of doing, but you maybe haven't done yet?
Well, I'd like to make a movie of my production of Midsummer Night's Dream it's almost my favorite thing that I've done, and I would love to make a movie of that.
Oh, wow. Wow. Did you ever go back to the stage over the years and do any?
Yeah, I just did a play.
That's nice.
Yeah, in Chicago, yeah. I go kind of back and forth. Much more movies, but occasionally a play.
Oh, I love that. I love that. I had a music school when I lost my vision, and we had a black box theater in the middle, and I had 400 kids go through, and we did every kind of musical, and we did plays. I just loved it. So,
How great.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was really cool. We taught them everything from wardrobe to sound to lights. Just, it was so cool. And I like kids, especially when they go home at the end of the day. All right. Number four, this one might be hard for you. What is your favorite song to sing at the top of your lungs when you're in the car?
I don't. I don't sing in tunes.
Really?
I don't. Yeah.
Do you hum them, classical pieces or something you'd play on the violin?
No.
Oh, that's interesting. Wow. Okay. That's cool. Well, not everybody does. So, all right, here's a really hard one, especially for filmmakers. And this is the last one. What is your favorite movie?
Well, it changes. It used to be Jules and Jim, but then I saw it again. 8 and a Half, Lawrence of Arabia.
Oh, okay. That one I have seen. That's a good one.
Yeah.
That is good. Oh, wow. Okay. Jules and Jim. I'm going to check that out. Like J-I-M? I take notes and then I look up things.
Yeah. Right.
Oh, how cool.
It's a true phone film. It's a good
one. Okay. Oh, very cool. Very cool. Well, you have been so fun to talk to. Yes. So thank you. And I wish you a very happy new year.
You too. Wonderful to talk to you. All right.
Thank you. Have a great day. Bye.
Movie Making with Renell Golden is brought to you by Samira Entertainment, supporting indie films and the filmmakers who create them. Stop by their website to learn more. www.samiraentertainment.com. That's www.samiraentertainment.com. You've been listening to Movie Making with Renell Golden. Be sure to come back for our next episode where we bring you the people who make movies you love. Got a topic about filmmaking you want to hear on our podcast? Send us an email at moviemakingpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.